PGA Tour back in Texas at TPC Craig Ranch at the tournament named after Byron Nelson, an all-time Texas golf legend and member of the World Golf Hall of Fame. World number one headlines the field. We get you set for the action as Golf Today starts right now.
Golf Today.
Golf Today on a Wednesday. Great to be with you. Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch. Golf Week magazine. Rain in McKinney, Texas. Pro-Am was canceled this afternoon. So the guys are going to have their preparation a little bit compromised. Shades of last week at the Chevron.
And if you want to go back a couple of weeks to the Masters, it was also a kind of a weather rain out on one of the practice days there as well. I think these guys are well accustomed to it. At this point, if we were having this conversation a year from now, it's a little bit different when Lanny Watkins gets done with his course renovation. But these guys have, for the most part, developed a certain familiarity with this golf course over the last 20 years. So they're probably not losing that much in terms of their prep time.
Good point. Tournament begins tomorrow. Coverage of the CJ Cup. Byron Nelson begins Thursday, 4 p.m. Eastern time on Golf Channel. How about the 1:33 p.m. Eastern tee time? He's back. The world number one, Scottie Scheffler, another UT alum. In Jordan Spieth, and a past players champ in Siwoo Kim, 1:33 p.m. Eastern time. Let's have some fun. Let's flashback. 17-year-old Scottie Scheffler making his PGA Tour debut, talking with our own George Savarikas.
George has not aged in those years.
How about that? Sister Callie on the bag. I mean, this was so cool. Look how tall he was already. And great already. An ace in his tour debut. Finished tied for 22nd, and young Scottie met the media that week as well.
Can you just kind of discuss kind of juggling, hey, you're just being a normal kid going through your high school senior year, and next thing you know, you're out here walking with the pros.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty cool. I've still been doing everything that I've usually been doing, except going to school the past couple of days. I have a calculus project I got to do tonight, and I have an aquatic science test in the morning. Got a good take.
Well, the world number one was a standout at Texas as well. He had two career wins, including the Big 12 Championship as a freshman in 2015 when he was named the Big 12 Conference Newcomer of the Year. Also a three-time All-American, the Longhorns won the Big 12 Conference in three of Scheffler's four seasons. And here is his record at the CJ Cup, Byron Nelson. Five starts in his professional career, just one top 10, a few top 25s, but he has made the cut every single appearance. And he caught up a little earlier with Jordan Cornette.
Scottie, you're back in your hometown here in Dallas, being able to play here at TPC Craig Ranch. What's it like being home, playing in front of more friends and fans, family than usual?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's nice to be able to sleep in my own bed this week. And, you know, this was my first PGA Tour event, which would be 11 years ago. So I've got good memories of this event. This tournament has always treated me great. And it's fun to be back here in front of the home crowd playing with Jordan this week. And we got to do that a few years ago here. So it'll be a fun, special week for both of us.
It's interesting, Scottie, in talking with you here, you know, coming off a year like 2024, it's not easy to win on this tour, but you made it look easy with what you did last year, a historic season for you. Playing great golf this year, but haven't gotten that first win of the season quite yet. How do you juggle? You know you're playing well, but you still want to put emphasis on going and chasing that first win of the season.
Yeah, I mean, you always want to win tournaments. Anytime you can get close and you don't get it done, it can be a bit frustrating. But I put myself in a decent position last few tournaments. You know, I had a good start at the Masters, good start at Hilton Head. And I felt like on Sunday I was just on the outside looking in where I needed a great round. And so hopefully going into this week, I'll start off with three better rounds and hopefully be in better position going into Sunday. But at the end of the day, just it's all about going out there and trying to execute. And I try not to pay attention to expectations or anything like that. All I do is focus on my preparation and then go out and try and execute.
What do you want to see from your game this week, most especially here in Dallas?
Well, it's a different golf course this year than it has been in the last few years. You know, we got overseeded rough, and it's pretty thick in some spots. I was able to get out and play the front nine yesterday, and there's going to be more of a premium on hitting fairways and maybe a few less birdies than you've seen in the past around this place.
Your last time out here, T5 in 2023, for you to go ahead and get that first victory this year, what's it going to take?
I mean, some good ball striking, for sure. You got to hit a lot of fairways this week. They've brought in some of the rough lines, so the fairways are getting a bit narrower, and I think it's going to be a really good test of golf.
Best of luck this week, Scottie. We appreciate it.
Thanks.
Scottie continuing to play at a very high level, but he hasn't won in 2025. And I feel like, Eamon, we are seeing, you know, little pieces of frustration
He's a fiery
from
guy.
From time to time, he is a fiery guy. You know who he is? He's the guy at the YMCA basketball league that nobody wants to guard because he's going to elbow you in the paint. He's going to dive for a loose ball across your chest. And I think we're seeing some frustration because he won 9 times around the world last year. And he's been a dominant world number one. We're seeing some conversations. And so, look at this. This is RBC Heritage. Just haven't seen that very often from him. But I'll never forget interviewing him last year at the President's Cup. And he was so emotional after a 3-2 victory alongside Russell Henley against Tom Kim and Sung Jae-im on that Thursday. And usually the guys have like a 10-minute period, you know, a little grace period. They sign their card. I had to interview him off of 16 Green at Royal Montreal. Microphone in his face. His eyes were on fire. There was tension in that match, and you could feel the energy coming off of him. He wasn't ready to be interviewed. He wanted to step back, compose himself, take his watch off or put it on, and kind of come down from the high. Mm. He is as fiery a guy as you will be around, and I think it has been tough on
you
him.
You think it's getting to him this season because of the bar he set last year, which admittedly no mere mortal is going to hit the bar that he set last year, but you think it's getting to him now?
I do. Just a
fraying
little bit.
Fraying around the edges?
It's fraying around the edges. It's seeing Rory McIlroy do what he's done. Not that Scotty's worried about Rory McIlroy, but Rory has taken the storyline. He's taken the headlines. He's the name in lights so far in 2025. Scotty's going to be competitive no matter who is doing what. But the thought was that no one was going to supplant Scottie Scheffler in the short term anyway as the best player in the game. The World Golf Ranking may say something different. Rory McIlroy, as we sit here at the end of April, is the best player in the game.
Yeah, I don't think that's even questionable at this point. There have been two significant events played so far in the PGA Tour season, the Masters and the Players' Championship. Rory McIlroy's won both of them and added a signature event as well at the AT&T Pebble Beach.
You know what the frustrating thing is? It's the injury. He called it yesterday a silly injury. Mm. He had a Travelers Media Day yesterday. I think he's frustrated with the fact that his preparation, as meticulous as he is, has been compromised.
Yeah, and there's certain things you can't legislate for, and apparently ravioli is one of those things. But it's not as though, we keep saying this, it's not as though he's that far off. You know, he's tied 8th at Hilton Head. Yeah. He was 4th at the Masters. He was 2nd in Houston. That's a banner year if you're a journeyman. Not so good if you're coming off a 9-year win in the way he was. And it's interesting, if you take a look at just comparing 2025 with 2024 with Scottie Scheffler, this is what you see. I mean, it's a reasonably similar number of starts. 2 off to this point in 2025, but the 0 wins, less with the top 10s. Obviously, the finances are extraordinarily different, but I don't think Scotty's, you know, heading to the unemployment line anytime soon. But he did, as you can see in that little drop note at the bottom, he led the tour in almost every significant statistical category at that point last year. And the only one where he's currently kind of off, you would say, is in strokes gained around the green. The short game sharpness isn't there that it was last year. He was 17th on tour in 2024 in that category. He is 79th on tour now. You know, he's putting better. The tee to green game is actually statistically pretty much where it was a year ago. Just that sharpness around the greens. Plus, other guys are playing better.
Yeah.
And that's the effect that we've seen from Scottie Scheffler, is that I think his rising tide has lifted a couple of other boats. It drove some guys to put a little more effort in and a little more discipline. I think you've seen that out of Rory McIlroy. Yeah. You've seen it out of Justin Thomas as well. I would credit both of those to the fact that Scottie Scheffler raised the bar so high, and those guys had to pick it up if they wanted to keep up.
Scottie a little rusty, a little frustrated, but doesn't feel that far away from getting back in the winner's circle perhaps this week.
Well, there's one guy who probably feels a little bit farther away than Scottie Scheffler did. That's Jordan Spieth. He's also one of the headliners this week in Texas, looking for a spark to get his game going in the right direction. He's also got some history on the line as we look ahead to the PGA Championship. We're going to discuss that next.
We're back on Golf Today. Where did the time go? Jordan Spieth making his 13th start in the CJ Cup. Byron Nelson's made 10 cuts with a couple of top 10s. But look at him back in 2010 as a 16-year-old. Look at that youngster, Eamon.
Fashions has improved a little bit since then, but he was always the golden child, even back then.
Five years
before that breakout Hall of Fame season.
That was the Tiger influence, kind of the baggy clothes. Spieth went on to finish, tied for 16th back in the day, 15 years ago.
The University of Texas certainly produced a long line of great golfers. Spieth, of course, a native of Dallas. He was a consensus first-team All-American and finalist for the Ben Hogan Award. He's the National Player of the Year during his one full season of collegiate golf back in Austin. He also helped, of course, to lead the Longhorns to the NCAA Championship that was back in 2012 and posted a team-best 70.92 scoring average. And among the guys who were looking up to Jordan Spieth back then, the current world number one.
We were always looking at Jordan because he was a little bit older, a little bit better than us. And, you know, Will and I were always kind of looking at each other because we were both pretty good. And, you know, he's a highly competitive guy as well, so we're always trying to beat each other. And, you know, we've had a great friendship for a number of years now, and golf's been a huge part of that. So it's really fun to be able to kind of look back on the journey we've been on, and, you know, being able to live out our dream and play the PGA Tour is pretty cool.
And Jordan Spieth, a Texan through and through, a couple of PGA Tour wins in his native state, finished T16 in that debut as a 16-year-old back in 2010 CJ Cup. Byron Nelson helped UT to the NCAA championship back in 2012. Also won three state high school titles as well. Been so successful and ultimately end up in the World Golf Hall of Fame. But I see someone, Eamon, who is kind of trying to put things back together quickly post-wrist surgery in August. And I spent some time with him at the Valero Texas Open. Man, he was there late Tuesday, Wednesday, on the driving range, working on his game, trying to find something. I'll never forget it. There was a caddy putting contest off to the right. Guys were eating barbecue. It was windy as all get up. And Jordan was there with Cameron McCormick and Michael Greller. This is my buddy's photo of Art Strickland, longtime Texas golf writer, took a photo. And Jordan was trying to figure things out ahead of the Masters. And he said that it was like, it was close. It didn't feel that far away. But he was spending long hours on the range because you could tell he just wants to get back so badly, if not to the player that he was, at least to the competitive relevancy that he had.
Yeah, and right now, I would argue that Jordan's probably, and has been for a decade and will remain, top three most commercially relevant players in the game. He's engaging. The fans want to watch him. Doesn't matter if he's shooting 80 or shooting 63. Jordan Spieth brings an audience. He's not competitively relevant to the extent that he has been in the past or that he certainly wants to be in the future. And it's not just the fact that he's only won twice in 8 years since that third leg of the Grand Slam at Birkdale back in 2017. But let's take a look at the number of guys who have actually won in that eight-year span as well. You, obviously, Rory McIlroy, Justin Thomas are at the top of that list. But in that time, you know, Tiger Woods has been fairly much broken for that eight-year period in terms of his body and his game. He has won more in that eight-year period than Jordan Spieth has. And it's a fairly selective list, but there are a lot of players who have been with the trophy a lot more often than Jordan has been in the last decade or so. It's very difficult, and it doesn't matter whether he's talking about the actual technique of the swing or just simply in the confidence and attitude. It's very difficult to get back to the player that he was, because particularly, and I know he's worked on the swing so much,
yeah.
It's kind of, if you're trying to get back to the layer of paint you had in a room 4 years ago or four coverings ago, you're not just going to scrape it all off and get back there easily. It's not something that you can recapture, I think, at that level of game as easily as a lot of people assume you can. And he's clearly working a lot on the swing. The injury, I think, was, in the grand scheme of things, a relatively minor hampering. He seems to feel confident now that physically he's over it and can't make it any worse than it was prior to surgery. I just don't think the confidence is there as well. That kind of level of, I don't quite know how to describe it, that kind of bottled brilliance that he had back in 2015, that doesn't last very long. And it certainly doesn't last when the results aren't there and the bounces aren't going your way and there's a little more sort of potholes in the road and a little more scar tissue that's been accumulated over the years. And you have other obligations now. He's got a family as well. It's not as though he can devote every waking hour to golf the way he could have, certainly when we saw him in that video when he was a 16-year-old kid.
And yet he will arrive to Quail Hollow next month with a chance to become the seventh man to complete the career Grand Slam because of that brilliant history going back to 2015. And that Masters, became the second youngest player to don a green jacket with a four-shot win over Phil and Justin Rose. At the age of 21, finished at 18 under 270, tying Tiger's 1997 record for lowest score in tournament history, since been broken, of course, by Dustin Johnson in that fall Masters of 2020.
And 2 months later, he added the second leg of the Grand Slam, Chambers Bay at the U.S. Open. He shot a 69 on Sunday. That left him at 5 under par. That was good enough for a very dramatic one-stroke victory over Dustin Johnson and Louis Oosthuizen. He became the youngest U.S. Open champion since Bobby Jones in 23.
How about this finishing kick? 2017 Open, Royal Birkdale, became the second player in the modern era to win 3 majors before his 24th birthday. Shot 12 under 268 to beat Matt Kuchar. Broke his heart, beat him by 3, and the win was not without some serious drama, as you'll recall.
And players with 3 out of 4 legs of the career Grand Slam, well, there's a lot more without it than there are with the career Grand Slam. Jordan, of course, like Arnold Palmer and Tom Watson, still in search of that PGA Championship that would actually complete the 4 legs of the Grand Slam. Golf today, we'll have more right after this short break. You're looking at TPC Craig Ranch, which is the home of this week's PGA Tour stop. It's getting a major renovation, though. It's the first since the course opened in 2004, and leading the way on that is the Hall of Famer Lanny Watkins, who joined us yesterday to talk about the extensive changes he's making to what was originally Tom Weisskopf design.
Some more notes on that renovation project begins following this week's tournament. It'll be led by Lanny, as you mentioned, first full-scale redesign of the course since it opened. Back in 2004, new TIFF turf grass grown on all tees, fairways, and rough. The greens will be converted from bent grass to ultra-dwarf Bermuda, and the bunkers will be reshaped or repositioned, and new bunkers will be added. So pleased to welcome in David Pillsbury, the CEO of Invited, the company that operates private golf and country clubs, as well as business, sports, and alumni clubs around the world. So, David, we spoke to Lanny yesterday. We love the guy. What was attractive to you about Lanny Watkins?
We've done a lot of work with Lanny. By the way, I do want to correct. This is important because when it comes to golf course redos, the grass types are everything. It's Zoysia fairways, and it's 777 bent grass greens. So those are some changes that were made in the last couple of weeks, which we think are going to give us the ideal competitive platform for the tour and for our members. But Lanny's been doing work for us here for a couple of years, and I've just been so impressed with his work. He's really a remarkable guy. His memory is photographic. I mean, he remembers, like, back at Riviera, where he still holds the course record. He can take you shot by shot, day by day. I mean, it's insane. And he remembers every aspect of every golf course, it seems, he's ever played. So he brings this incredible Hall of Fame knowledge with him that he's putting to work in the field with a couple of great designers that have impeccable track records. And so that's really what attracted us to Lanny. And Lanny, of course, is a little salty, and he says it like he thinks it, without a filter. And I just believe that with his relationship with Tom Weisskopf, which is kind of a storybook, you know, with Tom's unfortunate passing, the fact that they were roommates and played together, and it's just a perfect fitting tribute to Tom that Lanny would come in and put some teeth into this golf course and make it contemporary. And really, we're going to put this golf course in a position to be one of the top golf courses these players play, and one of the top golf courses in Texas for the next 25 years. That's the goal.
David, you've been around long enough to know that tour players can be somewhat volatile critics depending on how they perform on a given week. So what review are you actually going to prioritise on the far side of this renovation? Is it what the players say a year from now, or is it going to be what your consumers say the other 51 weeks of the year?
Yeah, it's a great question, Eamon. I mean, the reality is golf course redos, they're really 2 years. I mean, even when we redid Sawgrass when I was at the PGA Tour in 2006, you know, golf courses are never really, in ideal condition in the first play after a renovation. So, you know, we're overseeding this year. It's perfect. Everything looks amazing. Everyone's raving about the golf course. You know, next year we'll probably take a step backwards, to be honest with you. I mean, it's going to be incredible. It'll be good, but it won't be perfect. It won't be perfect until 27. And so I think the players will love the greens next year. I think they'll love the look. I think they'll love the redesigns hole by hole that Lanny's bringing to the table. But in 27, I think players are just going to rave about this golf course. And the members, of course, they're thrilled with the grass selections. The Zoysia fairways, they take a little longer to grow, for example. And so if we don't have a really hot summer, which, you know, we usually do in Dallas, you know, we could have some seams in the fairways, for example, you know, during the tournament next year. So it's going to take a little while for it to mature, but we're confident we're going to have a masterpiece here when this thing is finished.
Your company is responsible for managing a lot of golf courses. David, how do you assess the current overall health of the golf course industry in the United States?
Well, the private club space, which is where we live, we have 168 private clubs across the country that we own, is incredibly healthy. You know, the growth we've seen in golf over the past decade has been astounding. I mean, 47 million people playing golf, and moreover, there's such a shift in how golf is perceived by consumers. You know, I think it used to be viewed a decade ago as boring. Now it's not viewed that way at all, in large part because of what's happened in social media. And the reality is we see a new generation of golfers that aspire to be members of private clubs. You know, if you talk to people that play public golf, they say, as soon as I can afford to join a private club, I'm going to, which is why private clubs have never been healthier. And frankly, the horizon looks extremely bright for us because there's not a whole lot of new supply in our particular part of the business coming online, and demand continues to grow. So that puts the private club part of the industry in a very, very healthy position for the foreseeable future.
That's great to hear. Lots to be excited about in the game. Lots to be excited about this week as well. David, thanks so much for the time, and hope the weather clears up soon.
I thank you guys. Appreciate it. And it's going to be a great week.
There he is, David Pillsbury, CEO of Invited, here so you can watch coverage of the CJ Cup. Byron Nelson, Thursday, 4 p.m. Eastern time. Friday, the same right here on Golf Channel. 1 o'clock Eastern time, Saturday and Sunday, right here on Golf Channel.
Golf Today, brought to you by Cobra Golf. Introducing the 3DP Tour Irons, printed for performance.
Back on Golf Today, about halfway through the season. Here's a look at the signature events in 2025. Five down, three to go. Truist Championship on deck at beautiful Philadelphia Cricket Club. That will be next week. How about Sunday? Andrew Novak, Ben Griffin breaking through on the PGA Tour. The duo winning the team event, the Zurich Classic of New Orleans, for both of their first wins on the PGA Tour. Ben Griffin, by the way, back in the field this week for the CJ Cup, Byron Nelson.
And of course, Novak and Griffin eked out a very narrow victory over the Højgaard twins, Rasmus and Nikolai. They are factoring in as well. This is currently the Aon Next 10. Andrew Novak and Maverick McNealy leading the way on that list, as these guys are attempting to play their way into the last of the signature events before the PGA Championship, the Truist. And then the Højgaards, of course, this was their second place finish, this putt on the last by Rasmus. That got them, that's actually Nikolai. I can actually tell the difference between them now, Damon.
I cannot.
But they are in good position in the Aon Swing 5, which puts those guys into the mix for a spot in the Truist Championship as well.
Yeah, always something to play for. Now we look at some Monday qualifiers for this week's CJ Cup. Byron Nelson, including the amateur Bobby Massa, getting through. Nick Watney, name from the past, trying to find his way to what can be a very difficult game. And speaking of Bobby, here he is. He's a sports performance coach from Dallas. Recently became one of the top mid-amateurs in the world. Reached the quarters of last summer's U.S. amateur at Hazeltine before falling eventually to the winner Osele Ballester. Now check this out, 127 mile per hour swing speed, ball speeds in the 190s. Once was a pro golfer after graduating from Texas Arlington, then gave up the game, forced into exile by the swing yips. You can read more of his story in Brently Romine's article on golfchannel.com. And great to have Bobby with us on this Wednesday. I hear the term Monday qualifier. I think stress. What was the stress level like just getting through into the CJ Cup?
Oh, the stress is definitely always there because now the real pressure starts. So, yeah, just trying to keep it all together. Like I said, I went and worked this morning, just tried to treat it like an everyday thing, and then show up tomorrow and see what we can do.
Bobby, you've got a full-time job. You have a newborn. You have two kids under two. You don't actually have time to obsess over this game anymore. Is it a little easier when you don't actually have to play it for a living?
I don't know if it's easier. I guess I never stop thinking about it. I obsess so much when I try to do it for a living that I guess that some of that time spent has just carried over. But I definitely think about it a little bit less because I got all these kids to take care of and work. So just enjoy it when I can now.
Bobby, your nickname is Bobby Speed, which is one of the coolest nicknames I've ever come across. How much are you working out with other athletes from different sports, not just to hone your golf, but to hone your athleticism?
At my gym, we have tons of professional athletes, guys like Derrick Henry, Julius Randle trained there for a long time, Seth Curry, Dak, Zeke. A lot of these guys came and worked out at our gym. So I've spent a lot of time with these very high-profile athletes, so I get to see what real athletes look like.
I read when you were sort of struggling with the game, Bobby, with swing yips, that you said you couldn't break 90. A lot of people would find it very difficult to imagine how a guy can go from being in a valley like that to being good enough to play at the amateur level you are now and also to qualify for a PGA Tour event. How do you make that kind of journey?
It's definitely a journey, to say the least. I would say that when it kind of starts, it's really hard to get out of your own way. Most of it starts technical, and then it kind of develops mentally. Then you kind of have to go back to the drawing board, fix it technically, and then try to fix it mentally. Although that kind of that mental side of it, kind of that scar tissue kind of always stays around. So it's a constant battle with that, even though that I'm playing much better now. It's always in the back of your mind that you don't ever want to go back to that. And I guess nobody really understands it until they kind of go through it, unfortunately. And I don't wish it upon my worst enemy to go through those problems and swing problems.
The cliche is that it makes you tougher. Does it make you tougher?
Oh, for sure. For sure. I wish I didn't have to get tougher that way, to say the least. But it definitely makes you a little bit tougher mentally. You appreciate the game a lot more when you come back from it. For sure. But like I said, I'm just enjoying the ride now. I kind of got through the terrible storm of the yips, and now I feel like I'm enjoying a lot of the time I spent working on it.
You're obviously well known for your speed, Bobby, and we've seen a lot of the best players in the world chase speed over the last few years. How much speed could a typical recreational golfer realistically expect to pick up in your mind?
If you really go at it hard, some guys have gotten up to 10 miles an hour. I really recommend trying to get around four. 4 miles an hour is usually two clubs a hole, which most people can get 4 miles an hour. I do it a little bit different in the aspects of I don't like changing someone's golf swing to try to get speed. I just try to speed up what they have, because when you go down the route of changing golf swing, you kind of lose face. And because this game's so fickle in the brain and how mental it gets, if you start hitting different windows that you're not used to hitting, I try not to go down the full route of being as technically perfect as possible to get as much speed as possible if you don't already kind of naturally have that a little bit.
Bobby, there are 30 handicappers who dream of playing in the Masters. You lost to Evan Beck in the U.S. Mid-Am. You lost to Josele in the quarters at Hazeltine in the U.S. Am. You were very close to driving down Magnolia Lane. Does it make it any bit easier, the fact that you lost to the eventual winner both times?
Thanks for reminding me. Appreciate it. I wouldn't say that it makes it easier necessarily. Those opportunities don't come around very often. Obviously, all these guys that are playing at that level are very good at golf. So you got to get a couple breaks along the way and need a couple putts to fall at the right time and maybe a ball bounces off a tree at the right time. It's tough to be in those situations. Obviously, it's a hard pillow to swallow to be that close and not actually make it there. But it's still a lot of fun to be in the hunt and actually have that opportunity.
You've had quite the opportunity this week as well, Bobby. It's not your first PGA Tour event. You've actually played the Byron Nelson twice before. What are your expectations for the week, given all of the other commitments we've talked about in your life?
I would say just trying to be focused on each and every shot. And as cliche as it sounds, is if you kind of take care of all that stuff, then the results kind of take care of themselves. But I mean, I'd love to play the weekend, obviously. If I play good, my good is good enough. It's just those guys are so consistent doing it all 4 days, week in, week out. But why not me, right?
Why not you? And you live in a hotbed of golf. Scotty, Jordan, Tom Kim, Will Zalatoris. Are you able to hang out, pick brains, money games? What's your relationship like with the professional golfers in Dallas?
I don't spend a lot of time with those guys, but I will say that guys growing up in Texas, the weather is never good here. It's always good enough to play golf, but it's not great. So guys get really good at playing at different conditions. The type of grass here, with it being Bermuda, is probably the hardest to chip off of. So if you get good at that, you can pretty much go and play anywhere. So I think that's why those guys are so good. I don't spend a lot of time with them. I've spent some time with Brandon Wu. I've played a handful of money games with him. And I got guys around town like Alex Kopker, Nate Wilson, and guys like that, and Chris Wheeler, that I spend, if I play a money game, it'll be with some of those guys.
Bobby, it's great to chat with you. Enjoy the week. Congratulations on what you've accomplished already, and hope to catch up with you again soon.
Love to. Thanks, guys. I appreciate y'all.